From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The House of Representatives this week passed a historic voting rights bill that expands access to voting and addresses the patchwork rules that states have adopted over the years. After Donald Trump's stinging loss at the election in 2020 and the loss of Republican Senate control, state GOP legislatures are wasting no time in ensuring bills pass that suppress the vote in their favor. The House passed For the People Act would sweep away such restrictions, but requires Senate approval. Georgia, where Senate control was decided and where Trump was shocked that he lost, is on the forefront of rewriting voting rules. The state house there just passed two bills that critics say disproportionately target black voters. And the U.S. Supreme Court is considering a set of voter suppression laws in Arizona, where the court's conservative majority could see fit to rule in a way that would undermine the Voting Rights Act of 1965. My guest is Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matter, radio host, writer, consultant, and social justice activist, and a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Cliff.
Hey, Sonali.
Before we get to the For the People Act, let's talk about Georgia, which seems to be raised as this example of where voter suppression laws often are birthed or are most egregious. What did the Georgia House just pass?
Yeah, so they're actually considering a range of bills. The one that's been getting the most attention has been the one that includes getting rid of Sunday early voting, which we know is a day where a lot of Black communities, Black churches in particular, do Souls of the programs, which is Black churches encouraging the congregations to go out and go vote as a group. That would be under attack because of that bill. They're also trying to get rid of no excuse early voting. They're really attacking the entire early voting or no excuse vote by mail, which is something that they actually originated in 2005, which they expanded because at that time they felt that it was their constituent, which it was Republican voters, that were mainly using the vote by mail, that were using the absentee voting. It's never been a problem. They've never had an issue with it. There's never been claims of voter fraud up until this election. What is it about this election that could all of a sudden have them be thinking that there's some kind of election fraud? It's just an extension of Trump's big lie. It's just an extension of the very things that led to the Capitol riot and attempts to overturn the election. This is their version of overturning the election by attacking early voting, vote by mail, photo ID requirements, including photo ID and possibly even having to have a witness signature to do vote by mail, getting rid of drop boxes. And we know what the impact of getting rid of drop boxes is. It's like closing polling places. The harder you make it for people to go to vote or to return a ballot, the less turnout that you have. They know what the impact is. They're really targeting it with surgical like precision, and we're not going to stand for it.
Let's talk about what the Supreme Court is also doing before we get to the House passed bill. There are two Arizona laws that are basically designed to suppress the vote that are being considered by the Supreme Court. There were arguments earlier this week, and that too addresses issues around those things that, for example, what Trump called ballot harvesting, which is basically drop boxes where people can put their hand their votes, or where ballots, mail-in ballots, can be collected by a single person and dropped off at the post office, etc. So what is the Supreme Court considering?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about this case, and of course it's gotten some attention, not just because of the subject matter, but because of an exchange that took place earlier this week, where Justice Barrett asked the Republican Party, like, what's your interest? And the Republican Party was shameless in admitting our interest is that we want to win. We want it.
Let me actually quote him, because we have the quote for our audience. This is GOP lawyer Michael Carvin in response to Amy Coney Barrett, who said, well, what exactly is, what is the Republican Party's interest in this case? And he just came straight out and said, because it puts us at a competitive disadvantage relative to Democrats. Politics is a zero-sum game, and every extra vote they get through unlawful interpretations of Section 2 hurts us. It's the difference between winning an election 50-49 and losing an election. He said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, he said the quiet part out loud, which is, you know, part of what's notable about it that is that he said the quiet part out loud. But the other thing that we got to take into account is this. He felt comfortable saying the quiet part out loud because of the direction that this court has been going into, because of previous decisions like in the gerrymandering cases where they basically have said that it's okay for parties to gerrymander if the party wants to win, if the party wants a competitive advantage, if it's just based on the party's interest and not on race, then it's okay that, you know, that people are impacted by race, but that the main cause is that the party wants to win, the party wants a competitive advantage. It's because of that direction that the court has already gone into that he felt comfortable saying the quiet part out loud, that he felt comfortable saying, well, yeah, we want a competitive advantage. The difference is this, that as bad as the gerrymandering situation is, they're now taking the competitive advantage from just having an advantage over in terms of how you draw the lines, which is bad and evil enough, right? And undemocratic. But they're taking that part of wanting a competitive advantage to then having the competitive advantage apply to who can even vote and what situations they can even vote in and what situations they can cast a provisional ballot in which precincts. That is an even more dangerous situation than the gerrymandering cases. That's why he felt comfortable saying the quiet part out loud. And so we need to take a very close look and need to stay alert to what's going on in this case, because it's a omen of what could come even after HR 1 and HR 4 are passed in terms of the direction that this court is going into.
And it's quite remarkable to see Republicans talk about, you know, when they are trying to hide their true intent, to see them talk about why they care so much about voting access and voting rights. And they talk about it as an issue of election integrity. When you ask them what were the, you know, there was no widespread voter fraud proven in 2020, they will respond saying, well, there's a perception that there was widespread voter fraud, and that's bad enough. What, the perception was created by them. And then you have Mike Pence, who finally broke his silence. Mike Pence, who basically disappeared into the night with his tail between his legs after Trump essentially sicked his voters on them on January 6th, his base, made it very clear that Pence's life didn't matter to him. Pence broke with him over, you know, basically realizing that he couldn't so openly break the law. Pence wrote an op-ed in the Daily Signal, a very, very extremist right-wing outlet, where he, you know, said election integrity is a national imperative. What do you make of this?
Yeah, you know, I couldn't even get past the first paragraph in that article, because it starts off again repeating the big lie, repeating that there are all kinds of fraud and irregularities that took place in the election, which again we know is not true, which the court after court said was not true, which even Republican secretaries of state and Republican administrations said was not true. And so I really couldn't even get past it. Again, it's his way, I think you hit it right on the head, it's his way of showing that even though he refused to go along with the coup, right, he refused to overturn the election, this is his way of still letting the MAGA folks know, right, the insurrectionists know, the white supremacists know, hey, I'm still on your side, right? I'm still willing to act like there was all this voter fraud. I just wasn't willing to overturn the election, but I'm still with you, right? And so I actually wish he had just stayed under the rock that he had crawled under, but This is what we're up against, that we got people who are living in a whole other reality, that no matter what the facts say, no matter what the courts say, no matter what their own Republican administrator and elected officials say, still want to believe that there was some kind of fraud. At the end of the day, it's simply because they can't believe they lost an election that was largely determined by Black and brown voters.
Pence said he repeated troubling voting irregularities, and he justified that by saying they set aside laws enacted by state legislatures in favor of sweeping changes ordered by governors, secretaries of state, and courts. Now, for example, in Georgia, that didn't hold up. First of all, these were Republicans in Georgia. Yes. That he's talking about. But even in states like Arizona, you know, and places where Republicans lost, they were really upset about it. Similar laws that were in place in states where Republicans won, they seemed to miraculously not be worried about voting integrity. So clearly this is about maintaining power at the expense of democracy. Let's talk about H.R. 1, the For the People Act. This is a very serious bill that attempts to make some of this access to voting more uniform, almost a part two of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, right?
It definitely expands access to the vote. It doesn't quite go as far as restoring the Voting Rights Act, restoring Section 5, right? It doesn't quite get to...
Which was gutted by the Supreme Court a few years ago, yeah.
Exactly. And so we still got to deal with the issue of pre-clearance so that a lot of these things that are taking place in states like Georgia and the 42 other states that are looking at these voter suppression bills, that these things, depending on the state, would have had to have been pre-cleared. But what it does do is it establishes as a matter of federal policy that there should be and would be access to early voting, a guaranteed number of days of early voting, a guaranteed way of doing automatic voter registration and different other parts of expanding the vote. By establishing that by law, then that would make it harder for some of these states to go on and do what they're doing, short of pre-clearance, but still. And at the end of the day, you know, what we would have liked to have seen, I actually wrote an article about this that came out on Inauguration Day, saying that this is what needed to happen on day one, that before the inauguration was even over, that they should have had movement on H.R. 1 and H.R. 4, the John Lewis Voter Rights Advancement Act, because you had to be able to see this coming. These states weren't being quiet about their intentions to do away with voting rights and to use the big lie to take action at the state level. Like, you could see this. Just as you could see the Capitol riots coming from a mile away, you could see this voting rights, voter suppression legislation coming from a mile away. So I'm glad that they passed it this week, but I would have loved that they could have moved on it again on day one so that we could have gotten out in front of some of the state actions that we're now seeing.
Right. If this bill were to pass and become law, and we can talk in a minute about how that could potentially happen, would it sweep away some of these restrictions in states like Georgia?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, again, that would be something that would have to go to the courts, right? If you got some of these state laws that are passed prior to this coming into pass, you know, it's a question of would they be able to have it be retroactive and all of that. I believe that it would, but again, that would ultimately come down to the courts to decide. I think at the end of the day, that's why we need swift action so that we don't even have to get into that debate. We would love for it to be passed in a way where if it's passed before these things in these states become laws, these voter suppression bills become law, then that'll make it even more clear. If it gets passed after some of these, it gets a little bit murky. Again, I still think that it would take precedence over the state laws, but again, that would come to the Supreme Court to answer. And given the discussion that we just had about the Arizona case, you know, that's not a place we really want to be.
Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary and prominent progressive author, hailed the For the People Act as the largest expansion of voting rights since the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. He said the task is now for Democrats to end the filibuster and get this through the Senate, make it happen. Let's talk about this, because none of this matters unless either Democrats can convince 10 out of 50 Republicans to join them, which there's almost, you know, zero chance of that happening, or if they end the filibuster rules, which, you know, right now they're having to go through all sorts of logistical hoops to just pass the COVID relief bill through budget reconciliation, but that and you know, just get it passed 50-50 with a tie-breaking vote cast by Vice President Kamala Harris. But you can't have that process for a voting rights bill, because only budget-related or financial-related issues, as far as I understand, can be passed in that way. Is it time to end the Senate filibuster for this reason, or at least exempt this bill?
Yeah, it's past time for them in the filibuster. They need to end it just on general principle. We know that it's a relic of the Jim Crow era, right? But even beyond that, it's got to be done, because without ending the filibuster, you won't be able to get a Voting Rights Act passed. You're not going to get 10 Republicans to sign on to that. You're not going to get 10 Republicans to sign on anything else that's coming out of the House, whether it's the George Floyd Policing Act, which was also just passed this week, or if it's any of the
which, by the way, one Republican voted for in the House by mistake.
right, by mistake. So whether it's that act or even the minimum wage that we've already seen, you know, the parliamentarian basically block. And that's not something that we told voters here in the state of Georgia when we literally risked our lives as organizers and when voters risked their lives to go out and vote in the midst of the pandemic.
Warnock and John Ossoff, the two senators,
Exactly. The conversations we had was that if we come out, if we do this, if we turn out in massive numbers, we'll control the balance of power in Congress and we'll be able to get action on this agenda. The conversation was not if we come out and risk our lives, guess what? We'll get the right to have the parliamentarian decide our futures. The conversation wasn't that if we come out in massive numbers, we'll then have the right to fuss with Manchin and Sinema. I call them Manchinema, that we'll have the right to fuss it and try to hold them accountable, right? That's not the conversation we had. The conversation that we had was that if we win these seats, that we will have the power and we'll be able to have a president and a Congress that will move on our agenda. That's what voters are expecting, and that's what we need to see happen. And so what we're asking, what we need is for Joe Biden, Charles Schumer to get that caucus straight, to get Manchin and Sinema in line, to do the kinds of things that LBJ, even though he had to be forced into glory by the civil rights movement, but at the end of the day, LBJ, Lyndon Johnson knew how to twist some arms and cut some deals and get some folks to vote right? Mm-hmm. And Joe Biden, who's been in D.C. for the better part of his adult life, by now needs to know how to twist some arms and cut some deals, offer some carrots if he has to, whatever he's got to do, do a trip to West Virginia and hold some rallies, whatever it is that he's got to do to get them to act right, because none of this can happen if we don't get the filibuster ended, and then we won't get the Voting Rights Act. And if we don't get that, guess what? Some of that Democratic caucus will be out of a job in 2 years and in 4 years.
Yeah, the very slim hold that the Democrats have over the House and the Senate could likely be lost simply because Republicans at the state level are, you know, would be likely able to shave away just enough voters in the right places for them. It's interesting, the For the People Act, there was a poll by Data for Progress that found that 70% of Democrats, 68% of independent or third party voters, and even 57% of Republican voters approved of the bill. I mean, perhaps if you presented it to Republican voters as this is a Democratic bill, they would have opposed it. But when presented on its surface as this bill would increase the rights in this way and et cetera, they expressed support for it. And Republican lawmakers, I think, are terrified of that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that's what's so dangerous about this voter suppression and this gerrymandering, right? Be clear, it's very much based in anti-blackness, right? It's the same thing as the country's original sin, the original faults and failures of this democracy are the same things that we're seeing now.
If the Republicans wanted to win over black voters and you go through a democratic process fair and square, they could just do more to appeal to black voters in a sincere way. Make your party attractive.
picture that, right? Imagine that.
That's democracy.
That's democracy, and that's what's at risk, because the point that you just made about how popular some of these measures are, the COVID bill, the minimum wage, the Voting Rights Act, even common sense gun law, popular not just with Democrats and independents, but with Republicans, but this Congress, these Congress people, and even at the state level, they are so insulated from the popular will because of the voter suppression and because of the gerrymandering that they don't even have to be responsive to the things that even their own constituents want to see pass, even things that are wildly popular, they don't feel the need to be responsive to because they're in a safe space that has literally been created by voter suppression and anti-blackness. And at the end of the day, it threatens this entire democracy. You can't have a democracy with representatives that are separated from and insulated from the will and demands of the people, even their own constituents.
Right. Well, Cliff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for Black Voters Matter and also where they might be able to follow you on social media.
Yeah, our website is Black Voters Matter Fund, like money, blackvotersmatterfund.org. And you can follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, IG, Black Voters MTR, like matter, Black Voters MTR.
Cliff, thanks as always for joining us. Always appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Sonali. Be safe.
My guest has been Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matter, radio host, writer, consultant, and social justice activist. We've been discussing GOP attacks on voting rights and the For the People Act that just passed the House. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.